Hey everyone, welcome to Cloud Masters. I'm your host, Macon Bordeaux. I'm joined by my co-host, Sam Clark, and today we are welcoming two Kubernetes experts, Kimbu and Alfred, to discuss Istio Ambient Mesh, which just went into general availability in November 2024, so pretty recently. This pretty much eliminates the need for sidecar proxies, and we'll explore more about what makes Ambient Mesh different from the service mesh, when to consider using it, and practical just implementation advice. But maybe let's kick things off just before we get into Ambient Mesh. Can someone give us a quick primer on what a service mesh is? Why would you implement it? What was it built in response to? So I assume just the normal original Kubernetes service.
Yeah, a service mesh is a dedicated infrastructure layer that handles service-to-service communication in a microservice architecture. So traditionally, a service mesh handled things like traffic management, like routing requests, performing load balancing, implementing retries, and handling failures gracefully. Usually, before service mesh, you need to do everything in your application. So service mesh handles everything without you make any changes on the application side. So apart from the traffic management, when it comes to security, service mesh allows applications to enable mutual TLS, which encrypts and authenticate communication between services. This is also crucial when you're like want to protect sensitive data. And when it comes to observability, so the service mesh provides detailed insight into how your services are performing. Based on experience, we have seen a lot of customers are implementing service mesh mainly for the observability perspective. So they want to see how the services are actually performing. They want to measure the latency, how the traffic flows, and they want to measure the error rates at the service level, which are essential when it comes to debugging and optimizing the application. Some customers also want to implement policy enforcements. They want to implement stuff like rate limiting and also use the access control features of service mesh instead of like build all these features from the scratch. They can use service mesh for that one. So why organization needs service mesh? So as microservice architecture grows, so when you deploy more and more services, managing all these aspects from the application's perspective is very complex and also very challenging. So that's the problem service mesh solves. So you don't need to put custom code in your application, and you can just use service mesh to handle everything just on top of your application. So everything handled gracefully in the service mesh layer. So your application only performs the business functionalities which you are written. So that's the main reason why organizations want to use service mesh. It definitely simplifies the operations and enhancing the security, and also improving the reliability and resiliency of your applications.
Sidecar giveth and sidecar taketh, right? So there's now Ambient Mesh has been introduced. And so from what I understand, it was released in GA and it was built to begin with to address some of the limitations brought forward with sidecars, which were introduced with service mesh. So maybe let's jump into Ambient Mesh now, or why it was built. Like, what are the main challenges that teams have faced with a sidecar-based service mesh? And do you have any interesting customer stories even to illustrate that even further?
Let's talk about the traditional sidecar model. So in terms of just the actual challenges, there are quite a few, but the number one that pops to my head is just debugging it, man. It's such a pain in the ass. Anytime there's an issue with your Istio proxies or your Envoy proxies, it's really tough to figure out what went wrong where. Every time I kind of have to help working on one of my own environments or one of the customer's environments, just trying to figure out what's going on, it's quite a challenge, which is why a lot of kind of customers kind of shy away from using it at all, just because of that complexity. In addition to that, it's quite resource intensive. So the Envoy proxy, which is used by the Istio sidecars, that does something called L7 or layer 7 filtering, as well as layer 4 filtering. Specifically the L7 part, it's quite resource intensive. It's got a lot of complex lines of code that deals with. And it's a very popular open source tool. Even Google uses it in its load balancers, but it's quite greedy for CPU and RAM, right? So a lot of customers see that, okay, I've deployed the service mesh and now my nodes are using twice as much as to CPU and memory as they used to be using. So that's one big problem that the sidecar model has. In addition to that, it's just a lot of operational overhead, right, and operational complexity. If I wanted to, say, upgrade it to a new version, right, you'd have to roll out that update to every single pod, and these sidecars are attached to pods. So when you're restarting the sidecar, you're restarting the pod as well. So there's potential disruption there. So you got to plan out and phase it out in a very strategic way. You got to roll out the update so that there's minimal disruption. So that's another challenge you have there. So I think those would be my top three, just the resource overhead, the operational complexity, and debugging it, man. I would put debugging.
Like I imagine hundreds, like I remember you saying when we covered ambient mesh in our KubeCon 2024 or EMEA KubeCon Europe episode, you said 100 pods is 100 sidecars. And just to illustrate the issue with debugging and the CPU usage, it adds up. And if I recall, ambient mesh, it's a different approach. It's you've used sidecar less. So I'm wondering how that is done.
So the cool thing about ambient mesh is it's a lot more modular. So there are two aspects to the sidecar, right? So there's the L4 filtering and the L7 filtering, and ambient mesh kind of separates the two. So instead now what you have is something called a Z tunnel or a zero trust tunnel, which is not Envoy based. It's Rust based now. And that runs on a per node level. So it's deployed as a daemon set, meaning it runs as one pod per node. And that's the proxy that takes care of all the L4 processing and L3 processing. So MTLS basic authorization handles all of that. The L7 filtering is still handled by an Envoy proxy, but now it's a separate component. It's called a Waypoint proxy. And again, the main difference is that it's no longer attached to your application, right? So these are separate components. The Z-tunnel is deployed as a daemon set. That's one pod per node. The Waypoint proxy is deployed separately from your application. It scales separately, right? And you can attach it to various namespaces based on your requirement. So so now you have the option of choosing like, okay, this specific workload requires L4, but doesn't really need the L7 stuff, which is kind of really resource intensive. So I'm just going to keep it. I'm not going to give it any Waypoint proxy. I'll just keep it in the ambient mesh namespace, right? So it has the L4 advantages. It doesn't have the overhead of dealing with the L7 stuff. So it's a lot more bang for your buck is what I would say with the ambient mesh.
And even like, so using the 100 pods, 100 sidecars, this would be, I don't even know what to call it because it's sidecar less, but it's at the now node it's, level.
It's just one pod per node, depending on how many workloads there are in the node. And then again, the Waypoint proxy, which is the L7 component, that also scales by itself, right? So if you start seeing, okay, you have a lot more L7 stuff you're dealing with in your applications, the Waypoint proxy can scale independently to deal with that, right? So it doesn't have to scale with your application. It scales independently of it, which is pretty cool. You know, it's more microservice friendly, if that makes any sense.
When would I want to? You mentioned it's from what I understand, like almost all the time you'd use the L4 proxy, and sometimes you'd use the L7. So when would I want to use the L7?
Well, so there are certain things, like for example, like retries, and so say I have, let's put a simple example, right? So I have service A and I have service B, right? So I want service A to talk to service B, but I only want to allow it to use certain HTTP methods. So I wanted to be able to use the GET method, but I don't want it to be doing things like puts and deletes and other operations, right? So that kind of HTTP-based policies, right? Those can only be enforced at the layer 7 level, right? At layer 7. So that's when you'll need the Waypoint proxy. But on the other hand, if I say something like at the network level or at the transport level, I'm okay with service A talking to service B. Then I can just use the L4 authorization policy. L7 is just basically a richer, more feature-rich version of L4. It got more granularity with the kind of things you can do. So that's just one feature, but there are additional things like retries and even rate limiting to some extent.
Have you guys worked with customers on service mesh, like have deployed service mesh and you've run into problems with resource utilization or debugging? I don't know if you've already worked with customers on switching or migrating to ambient mesh, but you know, what would you even look for in terms of like, did this help me? Like, besides, I imagine CPU usage, you'd look at that, but like, kind of what would you look at there? Because one of the biggest promises that I've heard about MEM mesh is resource optimization. So,
yeah. So, as Alfred said, like the ambient mesh removes the need for per pod sidecar. So, that's the traditional sidecar based approach, which is implemented in Istio and Linkerd. So, and the ambient mesh removes that one, and then you go for like per node level proxy. Most of the time, it's the Zetunnel proxy and then optional. The L7 proxy, so that reduces the CPU and memory usage at the pod level. So you don't initially, it also makes room for running additional pods at the node level. So you have now more room to run additional pods. So that one, and most some of the customers we work with shown interest, like how Ambient Mesh will solve this problem, because they definitely face issues when it comes to resource constraints as well as managing the servicefulness. It's a big thing, because if you are running thousands, thousand pods, it's like thousand sidecars, and also like adults, and also you need to like restart each and every workload in order to inject these inject the new version of the sidecar, which is very painful, because managing and upgrading the traditional sidecar based service mesh is painful. And the ambient mesh reduces the effort, because you know all you have to do is like just the node level proxy restart when you're like updating the components. So once you update it, and all the applications running on the particular node uses the same Zetunnel proxy, so there is no parallel pod restart is required. It simplifies how you are upgrading it. It simplifies how you are deploying the sidecar. It reduces the overall CPU and memory usage of your application pod. It also makes rooms for additional pods, so you are overall you're going to reduce your infrastructure cost. We don't need to run more nodes now. It also like optimizing how the traffic is routed. So traditionally, when application A needs to make a call to application B, if both are running the sidecar, the traffic needs to go to the sidecar, leave the sidecar, and then enter the sidecar running in the application B, and then it's just additional two extra hops. The ambient mode removes that extra hop, so it will reduce the overall latency. How the request are getting processed, and also like, so some of the metrics the customer needs to track is like, definitely they need to track the pod level memory and the CPU usage and the resource utilization of node, and they want to like reduce the size of the node if they see like the nodes are not utilized correctly. Also, they need to track the service to service level request latency to see how whether is there any improvement, and they also need to track the for density per node and how the cluster autoscaler behaves when you're running the ambient mode. Those are some of the metrics they need to track when they are deploying the ambient mesh, and some of the benefits they are getting.
So I'm hearing that that the ambient mesh gives you better performance, easier manageability, better latency in terms of your requests between. Why wouldn't I move to this? Are there situations or reasons to stay with the old sidecar method, legacy, whatever you want to call it, beyond just this is what I know and I don't want to change stuff?
I think that's a tough question. So there is the comfort level with what you already know. It's always scary to like try something new, especially when you're planning on implementing it at a large scale, right? So there is a bit of hesitancy in that area, but also like from some folks that I talked to earlier, there were references about security concerns, because if you look at the networking, right, how it's working now is that each of these pods, they're communicating with the Zetunnel component, which is basically, it was using the host network. This was at least when ambient mesh was in pre-GA, right, before the GA status. At that time, it was a little scary just because of the kind of network privileges required by these components. In addition to that, like if that component, right, the Zetunnel component, if that gets compromised, your blast radius is the entire node. But in my how I would kind of advocate against that or defend against those kind of statements is that the L7 components, right? Those are more susceptible to vulnerabilities just because of the complexity involved, right? And there's a saying, complexity breeds vulnerability. So the ZTEL component, I would say it's low risk, slightly high impact, but the traditional on-my proxy is just, it's slightly higher risk and decent impact regardless. So it's kind of like a trade-off. There are security concerns, but I think we'll talk about this a bit further perhaps later, but with the subsequent questions. But I think that the way that Istio has kind of adapted their security model from where they were like a year or 2 years ago, it's certainly given me a lot more comfort with the way things are happening now. But back then, yeah, I would say it was a little, there was room for doubt earlier, I would say that.
I was thinking like in the 100 pod, 100 sidecar example, are those sidecars also just, is that adding a dash, like 100 more additional vulnerable areas of entry?
Absolutely.
Was that a concern with sidecars?
I would say it's the other way around. I would be more concerned about my application vulnerability than the sidecar. Because remember, Envoy is a pretty sturdy service, right? It's used in critical areas by a lot of different companies. It's more about your own application, right? So if your own application is kind of vulnerable and it's compromised by an attacker, that means that the attacker not only has access to your application and the secrets and credentials within the application itself, within the memory or the environment, but now the attacker has access to the sidecar as well, because the networking is shared between both the containers and the pod. So I think that's a lot scarier. Now with the ambient mesh model, these two components are separated, right? So your application is entirely separated from the proxies. So you have a little more safety there.
I wanted to go into migration. So if you know, a company is like, okay, I hear you. I understand there's security risk with both, or there's potential security. I don't know what the word is, but I made my decision. I want to go to ambient mesh. What types of workloads should I migrate first? Is there like a criteria I should follow? Best practices, rules of thumb?
So when planning for the migration, so we normally advise always plan the low risk L4 only workloads first, because that's the first thing is that's easy to implement. At the namespace level, you can just enable it, and then you just start monitoring the L4 traffic to make sure everything is working at expected before you turn on L7. So the one general rule is like always prioritize the low risk L4 only first. Monitor it. That for example, that you can keep it in phase one, and then after that you can look for like resources that you work close. So most of the time, the teams wants to move away from the service mesh. Mainly, it's like the sidecars are consuming more resources than the actual application container. So that affects the application performance. So that's why they want to move away from this like KBOS, it's like car-based model. So probably they'll, so once you prove that the L4 only services are working as expected, you don't see any issues, yeah, you can just plan to go with the resource availability workloads as a phase one or phase two, monitor it. And then yeah, before you start migrating your stateful workloads, start with the stateless services, because they are easier to migrate, because they don't have the complexity like the persistent or failover requirements like the stateful set workloads. So go with the stateless applications for let's say phase two, and then you can slowly start with the critical L7 applications. So once you're comfortable with how the ambient mesh works, and once you start collecting all the metrics you need, and you're comfortable that everything is working as expected as it was before, the sidecar based model, because there will be some changes when it comes to collecting metrics. You may need to tweak your dashboard to get the visibility you need. So once you have everything in control, and then you can start planning moving the critical application to ambient services, like start with the L7, and then later you can go for the stateful applications like databases, Kafka, or any other stateful application you're running in the later phase. And then you can start planning for the complex observability needs, and then yeah, definitely the production critical workloads you keep it for the last one. Once everything is working as expected, you plan your production critical workloads for the last phase. Obviously, everything you first need to test it in your lower environment. And then you start migrating slowly into your production environment.
I'll add one thing to that is that if anyone's hesitant during the migration process, do remember that you you can have a hybrid model, right? So you can have sidecars running along the ambient mesh data plane. You can have both at the same time. So there shouldn't be any hesitancy that, oh, I have to move everything at once, right? So sidecars are still first-class citizens in the Istio data plane.
Yeah. So in the ambient mode, the Istio control plane remains the same. It supports both the state, the proxy sidecar-based model as well as the ambient model. So there is no need that you need to run two different STUD control planes. It's a single STUD control plane which supports both the model. As Alfred said, you can run both at the same time, and then you can just slowly migrate from the sidecar-based model to ambient model.
If you prefer hybrid, you can just really migrate the L4 only services, stateless apps, anything kind of resource intensive, and the rest can stay with service mesh.
I would still suggest to kind of like think of it. This is just my personal opinion. I would consider eventually transitioning entirely to the ambient mesh because, again, remember the stuff you're leaving with, the L7 stuff you're leaving, the onboard proxy that's taking care of it, the sidecar, right? It has L4 stuff as well, so that's additional baggage. So you kind of want to eventually go to a model where you're totally modularized and kind of segregated. I also want to kind of clarify a bit. I think I might have given the wrong impression about the security model of ambient mesh. I'll talk a bit about that in a little more detail. So I found out quite recently after ambient mesh came on GA, I started testing it out on all these different environments. Turns out back then when I first tested it, like if you remember last year when we were talking about this, I told you that it has compatibility issues with GK data plane V2 and autopilot and this and that. And it did have a lot of compatibility issues with certain CNIs. It's different now. And I'm like, I tested it out on data plane V2, it works. I tried it on autopilot, it works. Tried it on EKS, it works. Tried it on my on Minikube, it works. And now I was kind of wondering like, what's happening? What's different? Because if I remember correctly, like the Istio CNI had compatibility issues with a lot of these other primary CNIs that clusters use. Turns out they changed the fundamental networking architecture of how it works. So before, how it used to work was that the Zetel component and the Istio CNI would use the host network namespace to redirect traffic between pods. Now that's the same name. This is a Linux namespace I'm talking about. So that's the same namespace that the primary CNI uses. So in terms of, it could be a Cilium CNI, it could be your Amazon VPC CNI. Because that's your primary CNI, right? It could lead to a lot of networking conflicts, right? Especially when you start introducing network policies. So they might be enforced by one CNI, but not the other CNI. It causes a lot of conflicts. That's why it just wouldn't. And then they even switched to an eBPF model, which is again what we talked about last year. They switched to an eBPF model thinking, okay, this is going to be better performance. And it was better performance. But I think recently, Istio and Solo, they realized like, I think what they want to focus more on is compatibility. They want to make sure that this particular service is available to as many users as possible. And so they had to kind of trade off a bit between performance and compatibility. And what they've done is now they've gone to in-pod network redirection. And essentially, that's exactly what's happening right now in the sidecar model. What happened was they did some research. They found out that a Linux process can create and own a socket in another network namespace. And that's exactly what the Zetel is doing now. So it has its own socket that's listening on these different pods, their own network namespaces. And that's what's actually facilitating these communications. So now I think the security concern that people used to have previously about, oh, this network traffic is going through the host network namespace, this and that. Now it's just like how it is during the sidecar model, right? The only difference is that the container is not within the very same pod. That's the only difference. Yeah, sorry, I went on a bit of a rant, but I thought I ought to clarify that.
I think right, the more for the merrier.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
I wasn't sure if you're trying to make a pun with the side conversation, sidecar. Sorry.
Oh, missed it. Sorry.
If you missed it. Yeah, I missed it too. Sorry.
Going back to like migrate, by the way, I think by the time we release this, we're going to also attach to two how-to videos, how to migrate right? How to migrate your workloads to Ambient Mesh, and remind me of the other one.
So the two demos will be how to install Ambient Mesh and how to migrate. I do recommend going through the migrate demo. It's going to show you a lot of the a lot of the scenarios that are going to be involved in the migration process. I think one important thing when considering migration is just a change in mindset. If you're used to a specific way of how policies are enforced, Ambient Mesh does it slightly differently. So you have to be a little open-minded about that. There's more focus on zero trust, strong identities, authorization through principles and service accounts rather through authentication and authorization through identities rather than through just namespaces. So I think just having like an evolving mindset about this, because this is going more towards the industry standard of zero trust.
So let's say then I've decided to migrate. I have kind of my plan set. What are the gotchas and pitfalls that I should look out for, or that teams should look out for when they're implementing Ambient Mesh, and maybe how can they plan around that?
So while Ambient Mesh simplifies the service mesh deployments by removing your sidecars, a team still need to plan carefully. Some of the common pitfalls like misunderstanding of L4 and L7 behavior. Some teams think like they just deploy the Z-tunnel proxy, and things like it handles both L4 and L7. No, so the Z-tunnel proxy only handles the L4 layer routing. So for advanced future L7 features like the HTTP routing, traffic shaping retries, you need to deploy a separate waypoint proxy at the service level. So that's one thing you need to keep in mind. And assuming it's a drop-in replacement for sidecars, like they just changed to the Ambient Mesh without making any changes to their configurations, as Alfred mentioned, like, so you need to look open-minded. There are some changes you need to make, but that's why we suggested you perform phased rollout. Start with L4, monitor it, observe it, and even when you want to move to L7, start with one service at a time, and then verify your configurations to make sure everything is working as expected, and then you adjust your configuration if you find any issues, and then slowly start migrating services. And then auditing the resource requirements. So while, of course, Ambient Mesh reduces the part over it, you still monitor the node-level resources, whether the node is having enough resources for this internal proxy. You can't just put everything on a particular node thinking like it will accommodate everything. Definitely that will affect your Z-tunnel proxy performance as well. So you need to keep an eye on your node level resource usage, and then you need to like change your node type if needed. If you think like your node resources are not used correctly, of course you can just change the node size. So definitely monitor the resource usage of your nodes, as well as keep an eye on the Z-tunnel proxy usage as well, just to make sure everything is working as expected. And then yeah, definitely you need to have a clear migration plan, like which service you're going to move first, and then which service you're going to move later. That's something you need to keep in mind. And as we said earlier, yeah, you can have both the sidecar based model and say Ambient Mesh running at the same time. So definitely you need to come up with a plan, like how you are going to monitor both and how you are going to perform the migration. So that's some of the pitfalls you need to keep in mind before you start any migration.
I think it's my last question, at least in my head. Like after you're migrated, once you're using Ambient Mesh, is there anything that teams need to change about like behaviorally, what they do in a day-to-day, how they monitor, what things they monitor, how they go about security once you're using Ambient Mesh?
Yes, of course. See, I mean, it comes to like monitoring. These Ambient Mesh changes how you're collecting metrics, logs, and as well as how you're performing the debugging. So it's been a tight card with all the logs and metrics are you need to collect from each and every pod. Now you need to collect the metrics and logs from the node level proxy. It simplifies the troubleshooting process as well. It simplifies the debugging because you just need to look into one Z-tunnel proxy logs to understand which inbound request is processing and which outbound request is processing. So you need to make some changes like how we are collecting the metrics, how we are performing the troubleshooting for both L4 when it comes to Z-tunnel proxy or L7 when you're deploying a waypoint proxy. And also, like when it comes to the access control, yeah, there are the authorization policies works differently in Ambient Mesh. So as we said earlier, you need to make some changes to get this authorization policy effective. So if you're using authorization policy in the sidecar-based model, you may need to make some changes and tweak to make sure it's still working as expected in the Ambient Mesh. As you said, it simplifies how you're collecting the logs from the pod and troubleshooting it. When it comes to the upgrading it, yeah, it's a decoupled to proxy updates. There's no longer you need to go and restart your workloads to get the new version of the proxy. All you have to do is just restart the proxy at the node level. So it simplifies how we are performing the upgrades and how we are and the lifecycle management of the pods. So that's something also you need to keep in mind. And you also need to rethink how we are going to routing the traffic to your workloads as well, because definitely you need to make some changes in order to support the L7 futures. So there are few changes you need to make sure the traffics are going to the correct service. If you're using futures like retries, and then the traffic shaping, you need to make some changes in the existing rules to accommodate with the late point proxy configurations.
I'll add a bit more to that last point. So if you're going through this journey, I highly recommend that you update, you evolve your, if you're still using Ingress, evolve it and start using the Gateway API, right? Your Waypoint proxy kind of relies on that for a lot of things. Start using the Gateway API. I think if you're going through this migration process, I think before you even begin migrating to Ambient Mesh, start migrating from Ingress to Gateway API and then begin your Ambient Mesh journey. That's what I would recommend.
Maybe you've already had customer conversations around this, or maybe you have some customers in mind that you've talked to in the past that are using Service Mesh. But in general, what are the best use cases for Ambient Mesh?
Well, the use case would be, so in terms of a service mesh, it fits any service mesh use case, right? If you have a lot of microservices, you want to handle communication between all these different microservices, a service mesh is good, but specifically Ambient Mesh, I would say if you're already using a service mesh and you realize that you're using a lot of you're using a lot of L4 filtering and not a lot of L7 filtering, but you're kind of stuck with both, right, just because of the package sidecar model, then I think you should genuinely consider Ambient Mesh. Not only is it going to be better performance, it's going to be quite a tasty amount of cost savings, right? I think that's the most appealing thing for anyone. So I think that's the best use case for it. If you have those kind of workload split where there's a lot of L4 stuff going on, not much L7 stuff, but you've got sidecar proxies everywhere, you're going to get a lot of benefits from the Ambient Mesh.
If I'm thinking about a proof of concept, if I want to dip my toes, what should I besides, again, memory usage and CPU maybe per node, since we're looking at node now and not pods, what other metrics should I be looking at if I'm maybe making a case for investing the engineering effort and the work into making the migration?
Yeah, so apart from the CPU and the memory usage at the pod level or node level, you need to now start measuring the pod startup time. Yeah, with the sidecar-based model, yeah, it delays the pod startup time. Yeah, the problem comes when both the proxy container and application container starts at the same time, the same pod, the application container comes online before the proxy container is live, and then Kubernetes starts routing the traffic to the application pod, which fails. So that's also most of the customers add configuration to delay the application container startup until the proxy container is up and running. So it overall delays the pod startup. So without sidecars, now you should see your pod startup time is decreasing. So you need to measure that one, how quickly your pod's getting startup. And you need to now measure the request latency, since the requests are now passed through a single Zeternode proxy and Waypoint proxy. Ideally, they should not introduce significant latency because it overall reduces the number of hops now, but you should start measuring the request latency with P99 and P95 to ensure there is not much latency, a significant latency is introduced after the Ambient Mesh. And also, if you are using Mitchell TLS, if you want to enforce it, you need to verify that as well to ensure. By default, it's enabled, But you need to like just to verify that point to ensure the end-to-end virtual DLS is enabled. And also you need to start measuring how the failover and the recovery works. For example, probably you just start killing the Zetunnel proxy running in the node and then see how the traffic is routing to other services running in the other node. So how it's effectively handling that one. So you need to measure that one, how the failure recovery works. And then, of course, you need to make sure all the data related to observability, like logs, metrics, and traces, are correctly exported into the system you need. So you need to make sure there is no data is missed as part of your proof of concept.
There you go. You have like a, for anyone thinking about making a case up, you have a little checklist of before and after to fill out. I think that's it for me. Any final questions or comments from anyone else? Wanted to make sure we covered this because it's, you know,
yeah,
it's basically a cost optimization like recommendation for Kubernetes.
So Matan, when are you going to start using the Ambien mesh?
I keep trying to go to Kubernetes at home for my home servers and stuff. But I just don't have enough stuff that needs it. Like, I don't need to run multiple containers of anything. So I keep setting it up and then it sits there and runs for 6 months and then never is a problem. So just, yeah.
Probably maybe I'll use it.
Avoid service mesh entirely until.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, I need it when I build an app with some AI, like with Replete, an AI app.
Probably, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Can we have some final words?
Sure.
Yeah, so if you are interested in learning how service mesh works or if you have any questions, and if you are visiting KubeCon, feel free to visit the Duet booth, and we will be available in the booth to answer any questions you have.
Where is KubeCon this year?
Yeah, where is
it? It's 5 minutes from my place.
Sorry, wonderful. Yeah, it's London, yeah. It's in London this year.
London, cool.
Right. Thanks for listening, everyone. See you in the next episode.
Thanks, guys.
Yes, thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Yeah.